And today we are back with another episode of The Buzz. I'm your host, Sherwin, with Gospel Music Buzz. And today we're joined by author, music industry exec, producer, and the funniest person you never knew, Monica Coates. Monica, welcome to the show. How are you?
Now, see, I slipped that in as part of my profile description, thinking very few people will see this, but it brings me joy. So that's hilarious that you said that. I'm doing very well. How are you, Sherwin?
I'm well. Listen, man, I'm super, super excited that we're chatting today. You know, there's a whole lot of wealth from just your overall career in general. I've been loving your videos that you've been releasing on Instagram. Every time one of those comes out, one of my friends always send it to me. Then we start this whole conversation. We hop on the phone and we're just always discussing just your approach to so many things. So just the fact that we're having an opportunity to talk about this, I'm super excited to be here with you today.
Well, thank you. I'm very excited that anything that I said you thought worthy to bring onto your platform. I always respect people who build a following in media, especially that has gospel music as its core, because you guys are so very necessary, and the listenership, the viewership is so loyal. And so I do not take that opportunity for granted. And I truly thank you for thinking about me.
For sure. So I'm trying to decide now. Where to start? There's so much that's happening, so much that's going on. We just came out of, you know, Grammy season. We were getting into Stellar Awards season. The voting and all of that is starting. I know we almost saw each other at St. Jude Celebration of Hope, but then when the date switched, we didn't get an opportunity to. I know you were heading over there as well too, right? The St. Jude event.
Yes, I am a big can you say fan? Because supporter indicates the donation aspect, which I do give to St. Jude, but just such an admirer of the work that they do. And I had an older sibling who died of cancer before she was 21. And our family really started taking very personally the type of work that St. Jude did when that happened so many years ago. And so I really believe in them. And I was looking forward to going this year and even taking my mother, because she's never had a chance to see the campus, even though she's been, she just got a certificate in the mail from them for 12 consistent years of giving. It's been way more than that. I think that's as long as they've had it digitized. And so I wanted to take her. And when the dates changed, we weren't able to make that happen. But yes, I really believe in what they do, and so grateful to their commitment.
Yeah, and that is so true, because this is my first time. You know, I've always watched it from afar, you know, seeing the commercials, you're reading up about what they're doing, but just getting the opportunity to go there, just to visit the campus, just to sort of just go through everything. It was my first time in Memphis, just in general, but just seeing the impact that they have had on so many lives, and going to some of the sessions and listening to the feedback and to meet the patients and their stories, like the whole weekend, you just left, you know, just feeling so inspired and wanting to just champion the cause that they were doing. So definitely wanted to just start out off by, you know, just making mention to St. Jude and the organization and everything that they're doing for anyone that may not have, you know, checked them out, may not have started giving or anything. Definitely you want to go and check that out. And kudos to your mother for being such, and yourself being such a loyal giver and everything for so many years. Wow, 12 years and beyond.
12 years that they have a record of. I think for her, it goes back decades, actually. For me, it's probably more like 12 years, but for her, it probably goes back closer to 25 or 30. But yeah, she really believes in the work that they do. And it's kind of a, maybe a family charity is a little bit broad. My entire family doesn't give, but we take their work very seriously. And so I do look forward to being able to take her another time.
Awesome. And talking about, you know, about just doing the work, you know, I sort of going back a bit to, you know, mentioning those videos that have all, you know, you've been releasing, and just your overall industry experience for anyone that may not have, you know, came into contact either with you or any of your work or anything that you've done, just, you know, briefly just tell us a little bit of your journey so far in the industry, and just, you know, highlighting either recent roles or just certain things that you have done within the space.
Sure. So on a very literal level, this is not chest beating. I've been blessed to have a career that has been very diverse. It's approaching the 30-year mark, because I started when I was like 10 years old. Don't do the math on it, guys. Just, you know, I started really, really young. And I got has given me, I think, what is a really unusual experience. There are very few people that I have worked with that have had the opportunity to work in so many different parts of the industry that I have. Most of the people that I came into the industry learning about and admiring, if they started their career in publishing, they ended their career in publishing. If they started in A&R, they ended in A&R. If they started as musicians, they ended as musicians, et cetera. And I love that. But I think God had it for me to do kind of a sampling of lots of different aspects of the marketplace at a high level for what I believe is and able to get a comprehensive view of the industry overall and be able to, you know, help other people along. So in these years, I've been a production assistant. I've been a studio administrator. I've been a personal manager. I've been a radio promoter. I've been a media relations rep or a PR person. I've been an artist manager. Most recently, I was co-executive director of Motown Gospel. And as a secondary title, vice president of creative and A&R, which meant that I was the creative gospel spearheader for all of our audio and most of our live video projects. Wow. And then also I had a roster of gospel writers at Capital Christian Music Group. So, excuse me. So that's a lot of work really a relatively short period of time. But one of the ways that I was able to merge all of those different experiences is that I was so naive about the jobs that I was applying for that I didn't realize that some of these jobs shouldn't all be done by one person at one time. And so every time I had a job experience, I ended up wearing about four or five different hats.
Wow.
But what it did was give me an extremely broad and diverse set of experiences in a relatively short period of time, which I think helped me to be a better champion for artists, producers, songwriters, and all forms of music industry creatives.
I mean, I don't even know which part to start drilling on, because that is a pretty, like you said, not chest beating, but that's a pretty extensive list of just, you know, just overall experience. And like you said too, you know, a lot of times someone that may have done one thing, like, yes, they're doing publishing and they're known as the publishing person, they're known as artist management, but to be able to just sort of sit in a different seats and just get an appreciation for, you know, what someone else in a different side may be going through or maybe having to navigate through, but even also being able to spearhead that and work directly, you know, with the artists and fuel some of those day-to-day concerns and so forth, you know. And I know you poured a lot of that, while it's been maybe 10 or 15 years since you released that, you know, since you released that book, you know, The Beginner's Guide to the Gospel Music Industry. But at the same time, I'm sure a lot of things, you know, while a lot of things has changed, certain things have remained the same. Certain things have been stable just for a successful career in music, you know, much more so within gospel. If you were to go back and do a second edition, what are some topics you believe that you might have to, you know, take up an entire chapter, if you may, just with the way in which things have pivoted slightly within those last 10 or so years?
Yes. Now you made a very timely statement, because you said if you were to, and I'm actually seriously contemplating and beginning the early stages of thinking through what a revised edition updated to. Nice. To deal with not just a lot of the things that have changed in the music industry side of things, but in terms of how we see artists, how artists launch, what success looks like, and also from a ministry standpoint, ministry, the core of the gospel doesn't change, but approaches to ministry do. And how we apply that to the ministry of music has changed. And so I'm thinking through now what would be the most beneficial information to include in a revision. And we'll see. It might take me a little bit of time to get that done, but I'm actively contemplating that. And it's actually one of the reasons why I started putting out content about a little bit over a year ago was A, because people kept asking me for a revision and I didn't feel that it was yet time to do that, but I knew that there needed to be updates to the information. And I thought, well, between Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Spotify, whatever, there's an easy way for me to give little
Get there.
nuggets of things that may have changed without revising the whole work. So I started doing it for that reason. But then I also started getting in questions and comments that where people's minds were working slightly differently than I could anticipate. And that's driven some of the things that I've addressed. And I'm about to lean into that a little bit more too, because I do think that when you do something to serve people, then it's to your advantage to listen to how people feel they need to be served. And so in a couple of weeks, I'm going to do a little bit of a cattle call for questions to just kind of see where people's minds are and where my experience might benefit the most. But the obvious place, to me at least, is at the end of my book, I was nodding to and actually really aggressively doing a waving of the arms that things are changing. Physical retail isn't what it used to be, and things are about to change. And let's see what that means. And I kind of end on that note in the book that things have changed. We're moving more to digital. Let's see what that means. And in fact, that is really what happened when streaming platforms began to be the primary way that people accessed both their music collections and discover new music. It radically changed the business model for record companies and really for the music industry overall. That's the biggest change. And looking at what the implications of that are specifically for the gospel and Christian marketplaces, but for the music industry overall, because one of the things that it did, and I'll say this in combination with the pandemic, we're at a time of worldwide stress and uncertainty, people reached for what was comfortable. So when you combine the pandemic with the streaming industry that had been going on for a minute, people ramped up in their consumption of music, and we call it consumption and not sales anymore, because it's how people are using music as consumers versus how people are purchasing music as a product. We found two things, two big things, that catalog is king. So people were regularly revisiting things that made them nostalgic for a safer time, for a happier time, for a more certain time. They were consuming that music a lot. And then that also they were discovering new music in through these platforms in really different ways. And that those new ways of discovery were not just connected to playlisting, but also to whatever mood they were in, looking for styles of music to accompany what mood they were in. And so genres began to move towards being mood specific and not style specific. And as you can imagine, there are lots of implications for what that means for those of us who are on the creative side in terms of how we have to adjust what we do and why we do it to accommodate what consumers are saying is a new way that they want to access art.
I'm glad you mentioned that. You touched on a few things and kind of backing up slightly when you mentioned, catalog being king. And I think one part about catalog being king is, I noticed just recently there's been a lot of conversations around what Universal Music is doing. Even when Universal Music took their music off of TikTok, and that sort of sparked something else there just based on that catalog. And then, some recent acquisitions and such, with Complex with building out their fan, their super fan platform, as well as, other catalog moves and so forth. So definitely we're seeing a lot of moving around of pieces in the industry and a whole just from a bigger perspective. But even drilling down for the average independent artist that is coming into the space, that is always trying to navigate, that just have a plethora of questions. I think one of the questions you sort of touched on recently was, do you need a manager? Just kind of starting there when you mentioned, does someone need a manager? And a lot of times I think, just from an optics perspective, when you're starting, you're always told, hey, well, you need a manager. If anyone's going to take you seriously, you need a manager. You need someone to speak for you. You need this. You need someone that knows the business, that knows all these different things. And you took that question from two angles. One, you're basically saying, hey, what does a good manager look like? but also do you need a manager? You know, in viewing that someone now coming into the space, like how would you sort of revise that just to recap briefly and some of the points you made?
Oh, I don't entirely want to step on what I already posted, but I will clarify a few things. So one is a lot of people talk about a manager needing a manager, trying to find a manager, but they can't describe to you what they think a manager would do. And so you're setting yourself up to make poor choices when you don't understand the role. And so the first thing I wanted to do was clarify what the role should look like. Not necessarily what qualifications a person should have, but what the role should look like. Because if you understand what it is that they're supposed to do, then it
Got it.
becomes easier to understand what qualifications would enable them to do that. And then the second thing was, do I need a manager now? Which a lot of people, as you said, ask that question and really believe that that's true. And what I've found is a little bit counterintuitive, and maybe I'm alone in feeling this way, but most things that we do when we begin to staff up or amass tools before we were actually moving in the vein that we think we're supposed to go, many times we create obligation and weight that is beyond what we can handle. And that's not in the best interest of development. It's almost like, now here's an I'm going to use this metaphor, and I hope that this is not derogatory in any way, but you wouldn't put a fur coat on a toddler. And it doesn't mean it's not cold outside, right? But they just don't have the height and the weight to handle that garment, right? And so it's that way with our careers a lot of times. Do you need a manager? Eventually, yes, if you continue to be successful. But if you don't have a vision, if you don't know who your audience is, if you don't know what your commitment is to genre, if you don't know what kinds of shows you might be doing, if you haven't yet developed a real skill set in live performance, if you don't know what it would be to engage with media, if you're not familiar with radio, if you haven't started recording demos, then maybe you don't need one yet. Maybe it's 6 months, maybe it's 12 months, maybe it's 18 months. But what my clarification was to add as you grow, to add the next set of
Got
needs
it.
just shortly ahead of where you are going to be. And so it's not about waiting until you fully develop to engage people, but it's engaging the necessary parts as you grow. And I think that that requires something that's maybe a little bit uncomfortable for creatives, which is to have vision in place, first of all, and to actually be thinking at all times. Whether you're in the studio, whether you're meeting other creatives, whether you're putting out things that aren't that you wouldn't even consider a demo on your social media pages, whatever it is, taking the time to look at responses and realizing that that's telling you something about who you're reaching, who's interested in you, and will have to be considered as you develop your vision. And so I think that creatives sometimes, because music industry careers are scary, would prefer to hand off the heavy lifting of development to someone else. And if that's the reason you think you need a manager, that's not in your best interest, and it may be too soon. You're going to have to do that early heavy lifting. It's like one phrase that I said a few years ago, and I firmly believe this, is that you need to be your first and most consistent investor. It is
I love
very
that. I
difficult
love
to
that.
ask other people to invest millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, or even hundreds of hours in you when you're not willing to do those things for yourself. And so you should be the first point of investment, and you should be the most consistent ongoing point of investment. And when you look at your career with that degree of, I'm going to say responsibility, but when it's something that you're passionate about, it shouldn't feel like a burden. It should feel like a gracious joy and a journey to take first and most consistent responsibility for who you are, what you're saying, and where you're going. And when you're doing that, you will know when I call it, there are these places where the grace begins to lift, where suddenly I don't have as much energy to do all of the job myself. I'm going to begin to have to delegate some of those pieces to other people. And that's the point at which, in my imagination of how careers should look, you begin to add on those pieces.
You know, and I'm glad the way in which would you phrase it even originally, and you know, this other direction as well too. And I think there's something you mentioned in between there about being the biggest investor in yourself, right? And continuously adding to it, and it shouldn't be burdensome. But I think, and even in what we're doing, with marketing, with advertisement, and a lot of what we sort of do right now within, within Gossip Music Buzz GMB Media. But a lot of times the question is, often to ask is, hey, if I just have this as a budget right now, I don't have a label, I don't have all these things behind me, but as an independent artist, I have this as a budget. What is the right direction I should go? And a lot of times, we've seen different ways. Someone may say, hey, I'm going to go pay a big artist. I'm going to go the collaboration route. I'm going to think, hey, I'm going to put aside, get a quote for the next, 3 to 6 months for radio servicing. And, I'm going to pay for radio servicing, or I'm going to go, all the different routes. Or sometimes maybe depending on the type of music, I may even, someone was just mentioning to me the other night that, hey, some artists should just release directly to, directly to church. Get some CDs, just like how, comedians and all did the whole chitlin circuit before. You do the church, you do the church circuit, you record songs that people can sing along with, and you sell your CDs. But you sat in these seats and you've had these conversations from a label perspective. Sure, label have bigger investment, but even, looking at this, as you can see, there's a lot of ways someone can take. There's no direct one way, but how would you advise someone if you were, someone comes to you and say, hey, this is what I have, I'm thinking about this. I don't have a large budget, to do all the things, but what would you say someone should start with first?
So your key was that there are a lot of different ways to approach it. And one of the things that is a core life philosophy for me is that your calling should dictate the manner in which you execute. And so there's, as you know, Sherwin, I spent a lot of time in the first part of the book talking about the difference between local, regional, and national artists. And in recent years, like within the past two and a half years, the Holy Spirit has really begun to knock on the doors of my heart as it relates to understanding a global calling or global anointing. And that's actually one of the things that I want to revise about the book is adding that global piece. But I did start talking about it a little bit in the content. And so what a local, an artist who is called to and graced to be very successful in their general area, as opposed to a wider, a regional artist, maybe tri-state or East Coast or and the national being mainly will require a recording component and where you're expecting your music to be available nationally. And then this global grace, which operates a little bit differently than those three, because it's not just about reach, it's about the manner in which your music touches people. And so depending on where you are in your calling, and I don't mean where in the process, I mean what level of calling. And level is not higher or lower, it's just different. We need
I
to
think I see
learn
where you're
to have comfort
going.
with operating within our grace. And so, if you're a local artist who is called to operate locally, there's a very different path to success than a national or global recording artist. And so, I would never give one person the same type of advice as I would give somebody else. And very little of that has to do with the size of the budget or radio. Or the team that you have around, it has to do with the nature of your calling. And so there isn't one blanket way. But I do think that one of the great opportunities in the age of streaming is that you don't have to have a big system behind you to get your music to market. And you can do that in a very cost-effective way. What you do in terms of marketing past that probably needs a bigger system, because if you're some of these platforms are releasing as many as 100,000 new releases every day. Now that's not necessarily full albums. Sometimes it's singles or EPs or multi-track singles. But when you have that amount of clutter, congestion, traffic in the marketplace, obviously the burden is on marketing to kind of cut through that to get to who your core consumer is. And that's where you probably need some additional tools. But you can do an awful lot in creating high quality, well-produced music and getting that to market with much smaller budgets because of the combination of digital ways of creating music and streaming platforms to get music to consumers. those things are pretty much the same for everybody. But it's interesting that you mention about releasing music directly to churches. If I were a person whose grace was local or regional, I would do that and then have a streaming component, but really lean in heavily to live performances in ministry settings on a local and regional level. And the crazy thing about that is when you do that, if you had shows every weekend, you could go very far towards supplementing whatever your full-time income is, and maybe replacing that full-time income altogether with live shows without ever having a song on radio, if you're local or regional. And that part of it, people never consider, I think, for two reasons, and I hope that this does not sound too judgmental. I do think experientially, this seems to be true when I encounter it. Is that A, we don't want to do the hard work of figuring out who we are before we begin to execute, right?
This is
And yet
true,
you
yeah.
shortcut so much of your time, your resources, the burden and the hardships if you just know who you are before you start doing. And the second thing is the process of recognizing who you're not and having peace with that.
You see,
Because
you said, and having
you
peace. Go, continue,
having
continue.
peace with it. And I'll go so far as to say joy, because I don't mean that I'm just accepting that this is all that I am. No. If the God of the universe had a very specific strategic vision for me from before I was born, that he took the time to handcraft me and then load me up with every tool and talent and gift that I would need to accomplish that calling, there is no such thing as this is just all that I am. That is the most powerful thing in the universe, because when you align yourself with the way you were designed by the original creative, God Almighty, all of the resources in the universe have his mandate to release to you. And so success is a byproduct of being rightly aligned. But you can't be rightly aligned if you're not willing to figure out both who you are and who you are not, and to joyfully and with peace realize that. I'm not even going to say accept it. Realize that and move with confidence exactly how you were designed. When we live like that, we live, I think, in a much more blessed way, where people look up and they don't know where you came from. They don't know how you got here sounding like that. They don't know how you popped out of nowhere writing like that. They don't know how you ended up on so-and-so's project or so-and-so's tour or headlining at so-and-so's church. Because when you take the time to figure out who you are and who you are not, you are well on your way to being perfectly, perfectly aligned with God's will, and the way that he designed us. And things that operate according to design tend to be much more effective.
I love what you know, the directions. I was thinking totally different from when we initially started this conversation, but I think I really do love your approach by first doing the work, trying to figure out, you know, your purpose, figuring out, you know, who you are as an artist, who you are as for your calling, and just doing that work. And like you said, sometimes you may get to that junction where, you know, where you're realizing like, hey, you know, this is who I am, and let me sort of lean into that versus, you know, trying to go against it. And like you said, again, you know, not to push against anything or just thinking, you know, we're all just one, you know, one parallel direction we're heading in, but there's different ways and different times and seasons and so forth. So I really do love that that takeaway. But I think also too, just from, you know, positioning again, trying to tap back into, you know, a lot of what you've been doing, even if we take it, let's just say from the radio promotion side of things, you know, someone believe, hey, you know, I've done the work, I've done all this stuff, and I think I'm ready for radio promotion. I think I'm poised, I'm ready to want to go down that path. What would you say you've seen, like those that have really been successful at radio, aside from radio, what are some other components from the work standpoint that they've had to done for themselves versus, hey, I've sent it to radio, it's there, it's out of my hand, and you know, that's it, success is gonna flow. Like, what else do you have to do in conjunction with making that radio investment to really sort of see or go beyond what you think you may eventually lead to?
Sure. I mean, on a very basic level, servicing a single to radio is the least of it. The very next immediate thing you have to do is know who the people are that you have to call to ensure that what you service was actually received, listened to, and that there's a potential for it to be considered for an ad. And
Considered,
that's
okay.
preliminary tracking, right? That's preliminary tracking. And so that's actually finding out who are the music directors and who are the program directors at the stations in the areas where you have serviced your single, and physically making phone calls to find out. And most of them have radio days. So they have days where they take calls to find out, did
Oh,
you
okay.
receive this single? Do you feel that there's a potential for adding it? And what time period do you think that would happen? And what can I do to better serve you or assist you in that process? And in this degree of congested marketplace, there's a long wait time. The line is long. And that's for artists who are well established, who've had number one hits. The line is long.
Wow.
At the time that at the earlier this year, when I was overseeing the radio strategy, the gospel radio strategy for the label I was affiliated with, we were estimating for the average number of weeks for a song from service date to make an impact on the chart. So that just means in the top 30 was 19 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And if it was a ballad, closer to 24 weeks. That's if it was going to be have a chart impact, it was going to take about that amount of time to see that kind of impact. And again, we were dealing with national recording artists who had a previous history at gospel radio primarily. Now, there are some things that shortcut that. And I can't give those all those secrets away. I'm not
Of
talking about
course.
Payola. We were people of integrity. But some of it has to do with an artist who has a previous track record finding ways to lean into their previous track re record, whether it is finding an early champion at a station that has been a longtime supporter and offers a lot of spins so that you can see more spin activity sooner. Or whether it is doing in-person events. In-person events take a lot of money, though. And I think that's something that may be a little bit more accessible. And I've never suggested this to someone, but it makes perfect sense to me. If you know that there are core or key radio stations in areas where you either live, work, or visit frequently, you should pay a visit there. You should be familiar with what that setup is like, the size of their staff. Who's the music director or the program director? How are they supported? Are they publicly supported? Are they part of a national network? Are they based in an inner city commercial building? Are they a standalone station that's, far off in a remote area? All of those things go a long way to telling you about what the process will be to have breakthrough at that station. And if you're not even aware of that, of who the key personalities are, who the decision makers are, what their listenership is like, you're behind in your research. And it's very difficult to be really successful about something you don't know anything about. So if your intention is to be successful, guess where you got to start? Studying about the place where you're about to go. And that's something that I almost never hear anybody say to anyone. But it's really, really true because program directors and music directors are human beings, and human beings like to know that the service they provide is seen and valued. So
Of
then you have to
course,
start by seeing and valuing. Right. So that's something that I almost never hear said and that I almost never see an artist do. Most of the time when artists become familiar with radio personalities and with where they're located, what the call letters are, where the cities are and who the key personnel are, is when they find themselves on a promotional tour. But honestly, that's a little bit too late. And it's not just because by that time, by the time you have somebody providing a promotional tour experience for you, you're already probably signed to a major label. But also because if you go into that kind of a situation already knowing who some of the key players are and where you're going to be, it takes away some of the feeling of being overwhelmed by what a promo tour could feel like. If every place you go, you have uncertainty about who's there, what the significance are is, and you've got to constantly turn to whoever is accompanying you to figure out where we're going and why and what does this mean. Can you imagine what that feels like to wake up all day long every day in a different city
That's a
for a
lot.
2 week period of time, not knowing that? And so some of this homework is just for your own well-being, to dial down the stress and so that you can go into a place prepared to listen and to serve and not just ramping up to understand the basics. Does that make sense?
No, that makes perfect sense. And again, I'm learning a whole lot myself as we were sort of as we started going through this, because, you know, initially I would think, you know, hey, you know, part of it is that you want to get on that tour, you want to do all this within some of the bigger radio markets, you know, you want to get in the tours here and there, but clearly you need to also be well researched and prepared even before getting there, because now mentioning that extra, hey, so who do I need to know in this space? Who's this? Who's that? You know, that kind of just takes a whole lot of that away. And, you know, thinking about that as well too, because again, I mentioned, you know, with the Stellars coming up and with different things, you know, a lot of times too, there's showcases we've seen, you know, showcases here. There's a showcase. Hey, should I go here and do this? Should I do, you know, all these different things? There's usually a lot of, you know, a lot of people's inboxing me, you know, hey, you know, I'm seeing you guys are promoting these events. You know, which showcase do I think I should go to? As an independent artist starting out, when it comes to, you know, getting visibility via showcases, going to a lot of these bigger award shows, you know, clearly a lot of times if they're not charting, they're not doing certain things, you know, they're not gonna go on the, you know, even the pre-show stage or anything like that. They may do the red carpet, they may do certain things, but just sort of navigating that weekend, you know, navigating. You may see, you know, some of your, you know, I wouldn't want to use the word idol, but you know, some of the ones that you've looked up to in the space, you know, you may get a quick 30 seconds with them. You go in there, you try to put up a camera, do a little selfie, you try to do all that. But what would you say, someone entering into that week to sort of like maximize that, you know, that touch point, maximize the navigating, you know, for some of these bigger events as an independent artist?
Yes. Now, Sherwin, you're about to get me in trouble because I'm going to answer you honestly, and it's
Okay.
not going to be a fun answer. And the fun answer is that if you are at the beginning of your journey, you probably shouldn't be attending those things just yet. Unless you are going to attend. Now, I'm a big believer in going to places to learn about places before I'm going to places to participate. Because again, lay of the land is everything. You know, to use a biblical example, and not everything is Bible, but this is a good one. The children of Israel had been told before they left Egypt that they were going to go and conquer Canaan, but they still sent in spies to find out about the land. To figure out who were people that they could trust, to figure out what the challenges might be, and to come back and to report. And they had already been told they were going to conquer, right? And so we have to do that same thing in areas of business and in secular spaces and really outside of the music industry. I think that one of the things that can be that is the greatest blessing, but also one of the biggest crutches for the music industry overall is that talented people don't always like to do the work to go beside their talent. It's more fun to live in the spaces where we're creating art than it is to live in the spaces that structure what happens with that art. But if you don't know more about the industry side of things, your artistry journey can be much more frustrating, right? And so I'm always a big proponent of going to places to listen and to learn before you go to places to participate. And certainly for events like the Grammys, even the example that you made of, you may see some of your idols there and you go to take a picture. I think that we do that a little too much sometimes. I had a rather well-known artist that I was on a tour with within the past 2 years. I was trying to align the person with as many high-profile people as I can. As I could, and to give keepsakes on the journey of pictures, right? And when we talked about what to do with those pictures, so part of it was making the introduction, part of it was memorializing that the introduction had been made, and part of it was having a keepsake of this moment in a person's life and career. And when we got to discussions of what to do with those images, do you send them with a thank you note? Do you post them online? Do you put them on Instagram? Do you put them in your stories? I thought the artist would be all about posting because honestly, I thought that a lot of posting would communicate something about their relevance to a broader audience, right? But the artist said to me, "Now, what is the difference between me and a super fan?" And just like you did, that's what I did. And I thought, truly, you're kidding. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, she's absolutely right. Because all those pictures indicate is that you met somebody. It doesn't say anything about whether it was an authentic relationship or whether there was any kind of business dealings that came from that introduction. So who am I flossing for? Am I here to floss, or am I here to actually make inroads that get me closer to what I know I'm called to be effective in? And
Okay.
so I'm big on not going for the cheap selfie. I would rather cross the room to shake a hand and tell someone how much they blessed me and what they meant to me over the course of my career than to stop and take a picture to post online so that everybody thinks I'm someone I have yet to become.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, you no, I like that. I truly, truly do, because I think what you're saying here is what, a lot of folks, and again, even, when I've been in that situation, with my wife's an independent artist, and that's been a lot of the same conversations that, that we've had, going to the Stellars, going here, going there, navigating, getting that few, that 30 seconds and trying to decide, hey, what is the best use of my time with that 30 seconds? How can I, fully maximize that so that the next time I happen to come into contact with that person, and the next time after, like, how can I build upon each one of those meetings? And I think what you just said for the approaches that we have taken, yes, of course, we've, gone places and you've seen the person, and you fanned out and you've taken the photo and such, and nothing really became, because again, it was just a photo for the gram, but going past that, the ones that you have taken the time to foster those relationships, they have birthed fruits over the years. And it wasn't just, something that was instantaneous, but, touch point here, a touch point there, a quick something there. And then eventually, if you were to reach out and ask a question, you would have gotten back a response in between, and you've been able to, just sort of slowly build upon that. So I'm really glad that you mentioned that and sort of hone in on that side of it as well. And I think another thing too that that I've seen is, like, having conversations even with artists that have been doing this for quite a number of years. I might not have, again, I haven't seen a lot of labels signing, brand new talents and independent artists as much as one might, think that they've seen, in times past. But someone that has been investing, and every time you're doing a release, and every time you're looking for this producer, and you're paying this and you're paying that, year over year, trying to figure out, how do I get back my return on investment? Right? I'm putting in all these thousands of dollars every year, but I'm not seeing it back. And if I were to take that same money and I, put it into a mutual fund, or I put it somewhere else, I may get at least a 2 or 3% return. But, I'm passionate about my craft. I'm putting all this money in, but it may be something that I may not be doing correctly. And I think, even looking at when Spotify made that shift recently, and sort of, hey, if you're not doing consistently 1,000 stream on a song, you're not going to get that payment, you're not going to get this. And Instagram reducing what they're doing with monetization. I think every artist right now is trying to figure out, how can I build, foster, do something, whether it's community, whether it's something else, to start to get that, that monetization. Can you touch just a bit on community building, not necessarily fan building, or if you want to call it that, or super fans is a term I've heard oftentimes, but just figuring out ways that artists that may not be hitting that million streams or that hundreds of thousands of streams can still sort of think out of the box, and just pulling on some things that you have said before to sort of just still navigate and be able to re get some form of return on investment.
Sure. So there are two aspects of what you said that I think m maybe I can say something helpful. One is when you talk about, I'm going to save return on investment for last, but I liked what you said about community building because really the baby version of a super fan is someone that you took the time to see. Is the direct product of seeding a community, right? Starting on a grassroots level and trying to touch as many people as you can personally, and then building out from there. And you end up with super fans because at some point in your journey, they felt your presence and they took a heart leap before it was obvious why that should happen, when they could still get to you and we could still get to them. And I think that fans that engage and invest that early on in your career if you continue to do consistent level of work and continue to be authentic in how you regard them and how you communicate with them, they will ultimately turn into super fans, right? It is hard to take to create a super fan from nothing. And that's why I think that even though super fans are a really big buzzword in the industry right now, it's really hard to get to one if you're starting with a person at this level where they can't engage with people who would invest that way, right? If there's no track record of consistency, it's hard to get a consistent consumer response, right? And it's really hard to get a consistent heart response. So the great opportunity that being an indie has is that you can really touch the people around you because their numbers are manageable enough that you could actually have some kind of personal engagement. I think that if you're doing shows, even if you are not selling physical product, which more and more these days, even established artists are not selling physical product at their merch table, still go to the merch table. Still sit and hear stories, still sign something or take a picture, still, you know, collect data on the people, have them sign up for a newsletter. Of course, that means that you've got to regularly produce a newsletter, right? If you want people's information, you got to give them something and maybe some perks along with that, discounts on the tickets or discounts on t-shirts or whatever you can offer, but still go there because what you're doing is you're seeding community, you're investing in community, you're regarding community, you're loving on people who've loved on you enough to take time from their life to come and say, I want to hear you, right? And regarding return on investment, it's interesting because what you described, how do we get a return on our investment and we spend so much money? That's the question that record companies have been asking for as long as there's been a commercial music industry. So now indies get to feel what that burden feels like. And honestly, there is not, in my opinion, a blanket answer to that. I think that you have to treat, once you decide to make this your professional career, you have to treat it like a profession. And so every year you need to be looking at your numbers and seeing where you landed and what your costs were versus what your income was from that. See what your profit and loss is and find out, are there places where you can cut fat? Were there team members that you hired a little too soon? Is there something that you can outsource as opposed to having a full-time staff member in-house? Are there ways of making your art that you can do as effectively with less cost? Sometimes a lesser known producer who is gifted, who knows his way around a studio, or is connected to an engineer who knows his way around the studio and is just mad passionate about what you do is worth more to you, your development, and your sound than a big name producer. And yet that person's work would cost you a fraction of the cost. Maybe look at some of the places where you spent and question, was there a way to get as much impact or even more impact by spending differently? So every year of your professional artistry, you should be looking at those numbers and looking at the strategy from that year and doing what we call a SWOT analysis. What were the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, and the threats? And if you're not doing those kinds of things, then maybe you should consider, do I really consider this my full-time profession? Do I really think I'm on the way to making this my full-time profession? If you're not willing to be your first most consistent investor, and that's not just where you spend, that's where you spend your money, that's where you spend your energy, your time, your thought life, your prayer life. If you're not willing to put in that kind of effort and energy, then maybe it's closer to a pastime or a hobby, which is a wonderful thing too. Great art comes from people who are pastime artists, hobbyists, whose works will never hang in the Louvre, right? But they have value in a home, or they have value for sale, you know? And so again, it's knowing who you are, but also being real, real comfortable with who you're not.
Wow. You know, a lot of the things you're saying here is basically to not treat it or regard your craft as a hobby, is that you basically have to do it as if you're running a company. Because everything you just mentioned, doing a SWOT analysis, doing all these different things, analyzing where your spend is, analyzing all of that, you know, this is basically, you know, someone that is running a well-oiled structured business, a structured company that is just putting in the time to really just, you know, not assume, hey, I think I might have spent XYZ last year, but I can't really tell you exactly what I spent or what direction I spent it in. So I'm really glad that you mentioned that. And even the last point about the about the producer and engineer, because I'm looking at time as well too, but I know you mentioned it with the producer and engineer. That is so key, because an artist just reached out to me, I think it might have been a week or two ago, and sent me a quote from an engineer, big known Grammy winning engineer. And this quote was just, great for the engineer at that level and the producer at that level. If you can spend to be able to do that. And the person's question, and I'm looking at the person online, I'm looking at engagement, I'm looking at streams. This person is clearly an independent artist. But the person's comment to me was, hey, what do you think about this person? What do you think about this quote? Who can you sort of put me in touch with so, I can really make this number a reality? And I'm like having a conversation with them, and I'm like, but is this really the direction that you want to go in? Starting out, do you really want to shoot for the stars? And, you haven't built much of a fan base, you haven't done a lot of stuff, but you're going straight for the Grammy winning producer. And now you're going to start a GoFundMe or a crowdsourcing to be able to fuel that. So there definitely was a disconnect. And I'm listening to what you were saying, and clearly there's a different ways of doing things, but also there is still that structure approach that you want to put behind it when you're doing that. So I know you touched on a whole lot, and I'm super grateful for a lot of the conversation, a lot of the information that you mentioned. But I guess the last thing I'm probably gonna point at you, and a lot of these here was, even some of my own selfish questions as well too, from conversations again I've been having with others. The minute I mentioned to a few friends I was going to be speaking to you, the texts kept coming in with the questions. But one of the things is, sort of looking ahead, with the trends and the development, and sort of like anticipating, the future of gospel music. There's the AI buzzwords, there's all these different things that are being, spoken of here. Like, what are some of the things that you feel, in the next 5 or so years that is going to be super impactful and people need to start looking towards? They need to start figuring out ways how to understand, labels are having conversations and navigating new spaces. Like, what are some of the things, if you can mention any of them, that you feel, others need to start keeping their eyes towards?
I'm not going to mention anything that's highly proprietary for
Of
obvious
course.
reasons. But I will say this. I think that anybody can get a subscription to Billboard magazine, right? And if you're reading that on a regular basis, you see what the trends are and what the things are that you need to be paying attention to. And that's for all of us. For those who have been on the industry side for a long time, that's still a regular source that you go to when you want to see what's next or how people are processing the last next. It's not just a place for metrics, it's also a place where ideas are introduced and where there's a discourse around that. And it's wonderful because those are public publications, and you can be at least on par with the conversations that are happening in these spaces by just reading those publications. I've been a proponent of that for a long time, and there are various levels of subscription at most of those outlets so that you don't have to take out a personal loan to afford a certain kind of subscription. But I think that here's the thing about I'm going to speak to gospel because this is what the platform is. The advantage that we've always had is that the gospel is not driven by trends. It's not limited to recessions and depressions. It's not it will never be oppressed by the worst of what the world has going on. And it's only ever going to be uplifted by the completed work of Christ, right? So we always work in the safety of knowing God's already blessing that, right? He's already blessing the message of the gospel, and he's already honoring people who are singing the message of the gospel. We need to be knowledgeable about world trends because we're called to meet people where they are. And so we should look to all the places where we can get information and insight about the places that we are called to serve. That's really a good way to look at it. But I think if you're looking at things like, any trend that has come come around has not changed the shape of gospel music, because gospel music is rooted in the eternal nature of the gospel. The reason why I say that is because I think that many times we can look at the world around us and we shudder when the world shudders. And yet, when we are called to a life of faith and blessed to be able to pursue a vision that is rooted in that life of faith, we have security as the starting point. Security is the starting point. But again,
Yes.
Sherwin, and this is why I will jump up and down on this point until God takes me up out of here. That's why your first assignment has to be to figure out, how did God make me? What is it that he had in mind when he envisioned me? And then what skills, gifts, talents, tools has he given me to become that person? And if we're answering that question, I don't have to worry about being on trend. I have to be knowledgeable about what's happening around me because I'm called to reach people who are impacted about what's happening around us, right? But I don't
Yes.
have to chase after. My career stops being a chessboard of strategies and really becomes about learning how to live in spaces of peace where we can yield our anxieties, yield our worries, and with open hearts receive what the Holy Spirit has to say about how to do what he's called us to do. And that's not some highfalutin vision of what life in the music industry should be when our product is gospel, right? That's just what it is to live a life as a follower of Christ. And so we always have an advantage because victory is our starting point. Success is our starting point, but we only get to tap into that when we understand, how did the original creative, how did he envision me? How did he design me? And what skills, tools, gifts, talents did he already provide me with that I'm responsible to grow to accomplish that calling? And when we do that, it's amazing how success has a way of finding you, because all of creation has his mandate to yield its resource to you.
I mean, I need to do some applause for that. I need to do some applause for that. Man, wow. Ooh, I love that. I love that. I love
It's
that.
not a hard thing, man. It's not a hard thing. The
Wow.
hardest part is taking off our expectations and our needs, you know? So, yeah.
Listen, I know we're right here at the top of the hour. Monica, I appreciate you. I honor your time. I thank you so much just for carving out time for making this happen. And one thing I have to say before you drop your socials and where everyone can sort of follow along with a lot of the videos I referenced, the podcasts and everything else that you're doing that everyone needs to tap into. I must say, it's whenever I come into contact with someone at your level, with the level of expertise and the level of intelligence and the level of just what you bring and your commitment to a space, and you reach out and ask for an interview and to get a response, and even corresponding with emails when we were trying to lock it down and all of that, it has been nothing but sheer pleasure just to communicate and to work with you. You may think sometimes you sort of stumble and think, hey, someone at that level, maybe they may probably wouldn't have the time or wouldn't respond back, but thank you so much. Just even in our engagement, I learned so much just with us corresponding back and forth, and just your humility and everything. It was just a pure joy just corresponding,
Oh,
getting
thank
to know
you.
you and speaking to you. So thank you so much.
No,
Let
thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you for loaning me your platform and letting me, trusting me to address your listeners, because I could have come in here with poison in my mouth and you trusted that I wouldn't do that. And so I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful. And I just honor you and what you're doing. And thank you so much for giving me the time.
Indeed, and let the people know your socials, platforms where you're having all these riveting conversations and where they can continue to follow what you're doing.
Well, it's real easy. So on every place where you every place, Threads, YouTube. I haven't started posting on Threads yet though, but it's coming. I need people to
Okay.
be ready first. On Instagram, on TikTok, on YouTube, it's all at the THE Monica Coates, and Coates has an E in it, so it's COAETS. TES at the Monica Coates. I welcome comments and I welcome views and I welcome questions as well. It's getting to a point where it's hard to even see everything, much less get back to everybody. But don't let that deter you from sending it. And I really appreciate the support. I think that we're all working towards a better marketplace, a more whole marketplace, a more communal marketplace, and I'm just happy to be a part of that.
Listen, and I'm happy as well too, because the fact that you're in that marketplace and we can tap in on what you're doing, I'm a better person because of it. And so it's a whole lot of other people. Again, Monica, thank you so much for joining us on The Buzz. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Sherwin. Thank you.